On the phone with me today is Cynthia Andel. Cynthia, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me.
So maybe to start off, could you just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about how you spend your days?
I'm Cynthia, and I live on a farm just west of Prince George, so I spend my days mostly wandering through the forest, but I do teach yoga. So I've been a yoga instructor for almost a decade now, and I teach at a lot of the regular studios here, but also some private things and some just other initiatives around there too.
That's great. And could you tell me a little bit about this new project of yours, bringing outdoor yoga to downtown Prince George?
Yes. So I'm really, really excited about this, actually. So I sort of delved into recreational possibilities for people who are underhoused, and as one might imagine, there aren't that many. And this just seems like such a valuable link, just for people who are disenfranchised and disassociated from many realities, it just seems like a link that they should have. And so I felt like introducing yoga in the park, which it will be in the Wittick Park, so that's the one right downtown, it just felt like the right thing to do. And all the studies have been done in cities that have introduced recreational possibilities for underhoused people have been really, really positive, and just found possibilities opening up that they didn't even know existed.
So, where have been some of the other locations so far?
Toronto has been extremely active, so I've looked a lot into that. They have a hockey team, and they have a soccer team, and swimming lessons, and yoga, of course, and Tai Chi, just all sorts of possibilities. Of course, a lot of things have halted because of the COVID crisis, but previous to that, there were just a lot of possibilities. Portland, Oregon is another one that has been really active. Ladysmith has a book club, which is so exciting. So just a lot of places to try this out.
And so you mentioned that that yoga will be held downtown in the Wood Innovations Park. Do you have a time and that kind of thing? Do you have like the logistics worked out already, or is that still kind of in the works?
No, we have that all worked out. So it will be Wednesdays at noon. And we have it starting, I have the park booked starting in May, but it is looking more and more like, we always knew this would be quite fluid, the start date, because of COVID. So it looks like we may have to push the start date. It's sort of open right now, but we're looking at maybe the middle to the end of June, actually, right now, because we wanted a certain amount of people to be vaccinated and just things to be a lot calmer before we start doing this.
Yeah, for sure. Are you working with anyone else on this project?
I've put it out to my friends, that I have a really active Facebook page, and I put it out to them, and a whole lot of people have jumped on board, so it's actually not even about me. Corey Matthews is doing the naloxone training for everybody who's involved. Every studio in Prince George has teachers who are involved in it now, so it's really become sort of a much bigger thing than what I initially anticipated.
So I'm interested to know, what was the process like of getting permission from the city? Did you encounter any roadblocks there?
Actually, no. It took quite a bit of time. That was the only thing. But no, I didn't encounter any roadblocks. They were quite open. I applied, and I gave them all the information I could possibly have. The only thing that they wanted me to do was open it up to the general public rather than just have it specifically for underhoused people. I was a little hesitant about that, but I think it'll work out fine. I think we can accommodate everybody.
So I understand you have training in trauma-informed yoga and that is related to this project that you're starting. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, trauma-informed yoga is just a lot of people who come into a class are dealing with things. They're coming there because they're dealing with pressures in their own lives or post-traumatic stress disorder or just emotional overload. And so we have to approach these things with a very light hand and make everybody feel very, very safe. So I decided to take my trauma-informed yoga partially because I think it's valuable in the studio, but also because when I'm dealing with people who are underhoused, I suspect that the rate of PTSD, and I know the brain injury rate is very high, people dealing with traumas that I can't even conceive of. So I thought it would be good to know what safety looks like for a group of underhoused people. So trauma-informed yoga just takes you from the very beginning about how to set up a safe studio and how to introduce the topic of yoga and how to approach people, because a lot of people don't like to be touched or they don't want scents in the room, or there are certain trigger words that they don't want to have spoken. So it just sort of goes through all the possibilities not all of them, obviously, but a lot of possibilities of things that could arise in a class and how to approach them. But the biggest thing is to just set up a safe container for people and let them know exactly what things are going to look like so that there are no surprises. There's no nothing that's going to happen that's going to be incredibly out of the ordinary for them.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest part.
I imagine because of the structure of this course, a lot of that work of informing people what it's going to look like and kind of building that sense of trust will have to happen on a weekly basis. Is that something you're concerned about or something you've thought about?
I do believe. I think we'll have people who are coming week to week. I'm hoping that builds up that. But I know that every week that things will be different, that the way it looks will be different. So I will have to introduce that, build that safe space every single week as though it hasn't happened before. And it's things like at the end of a class, we'll lie down in Shavasana, which is just a pose where we lie down and we integrate all the work we've done and all the things we've thought about. I wouldn't want anybody moving around during Shavasana. I wouldn't want anybody getting up and walking around because that's a very vulnerable place to be. So I think that's something that we'll have to make sure that we've got people sort of, you know, making sure that that's not happening. So the idea, and I've sort of talked to the other teachers about this as well, is we'd like two teachers at each class and then two people who are not teachers who are just there to sort of respond to people's needs. So there'll be four people actually volunteering at each of the outdoor sessions to just keep things safe.
Yeah.
So that'll be a big part of it, yeah.
So in your opinion, how does social justice fit with your yoga practice? And maybe more generally, what are some of the ways that the industry tends to get it wrong, particularly when catering yoga to predominantly a white audience?
Oh, thank you so much for asking. This has become something that has really, this last year, has really brought out some rifts in the wellness community, and it's quite painful to watch, actually. But I think that there are things yoga focuses very much on sort of growing independently, and I think that's one of the things that gets wrong from its roots. I think that its roots are growing as a community to support one another, and I feel like when we take that community out of yoga, the supportive community out of yoga, then it just becomes something that we do for vanity or for show or, you know, for pretty poses. And so I think that we need to bring that community, that connection, back into yoga. So the word ahimsa, which means do no harm, I think a lot of people take that as, you know, they're vegetarian or they're vegan, and then they finish it there. But do no harm actually means stopping structural harm from happening to begin with. So we need to stop and we need to stay. Ahimsa doesn't just mean we're not going to harm anything now, but it means we need to actually put roadblocks in the place of harm happening. So so if we see harm happening, it's not good enough to say, oh, I'm not involved in that. It's only good enough to say I'm going to actually stand in the way of that happening. And yoga doesn't get it wrong, but the current iteration of Western yoga, I think, gets it wrong. They have this just standoff: if it's not affecting me, then I don't need to be involved in it. And I think that's the biggest problem.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So you've touched on this a little bit already, but, you know, for many, yoga can feel kind of inaccessible and exclusive. How are you planning to ensure that this project feels different, feels welcoming to the downtown community, particularly for unhoused people?
Again, like, you're asking all the best questions. And that was why I had wanted to leave it as a container for specifically for underhoused people.
Mm-hmm.
And why I sort of balked a little bit at opening it up to the public, because I think it could very easily be taken over by people who want to do lunchtime yoga, right? Who want to come down from their downtown offices and do lunchtime yoga. But I think the biggest way to do that is to communicate with the people like the Foundry and the Fire Pit, the Carrier Second Eve First Nations Youth Services, and the New Hope Society. I think that those are the people that I would like to that I have actually communicated with, to send people our way, so that it is primarily the people who are underhoused there. And I would like to make it clear, when I'm advertising it, that is specifically targeted to underhouse. So people aren't going to see yoga like they get in the studios. We're not going to be doing showy practices. In fact, a lot of the things that we will be doing might not even look like yoga specifically, because the asana, the poses, are only a very small portion of what yoga looks like. So I think that if people are coming expecting to get that lunchtime Lululemon experience, that's not what it's going to look like at all. So I'm hoping that that stops that from happening. And I'm also hoping that if somebody does want to come and participate in this, that it's a really respectful way that they participate. That they know that this is not directed to them. It's actually specifically directed at the Underhouse people in Prince George.
Yeah, and how will you know if the project is doing the work that you're hoping it does? And what are maybe some of the ways to mitigate or to respond to how it's developing?
So I think part of the way that we'll know that it's responding to people's needs is whether they come back. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that we do see some of the same faces week to week. That's something that is always fluid, because hopefully people are becoming housed and maybe moving to different places. And I know that this doesn't talk to the issue of homelessness. Actually, it doesn't talk. Homelessness needs to be solved at home. This talks to the issue of recreation and connection within the homeless community. So I think we'll know whether it's working through that. But I think also we'll know because we're forming relationships with these people that are coming to our classes. So mm-hmm. If we can form relationships, maybe we can. We can guide people to steps that can be taken to increase their connection to community and their ability to reach through housing and we want to use this as a gateway for possibly for other things. Like, again, I mentioned earlier a book club. Wouldn't that be cool? Like, that'd be such a neat thing.
Yeah.
But then just seeing people connect to places where they can move into more communities. So that's not a separate community between things. We've got this one big community. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting and innovative approach to community building and a really humanizing approach to caring for people who find themselves in vulnerable situations. This is a broad question. What are your hopes and maybe also your fears for this initiative?
So my hopes are that we will be able to form a community. That is probably the biggest hope. I that's really what I would like to see, is that we'll be able to form a community, a strong bonds that people can support one another. Because, you know, I have lived in poverty, but I've been able to make really crappy decisions in my life, and I have a community that will have supported me through all of this because they are privileged people. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine being in a situation where I had a broken community, where I had intergenerational trauma to deal with. I didn't have those people to catch me when I fell. So what I'm hoping is that we're able to form a group of people who can catch each other when they fall. And I do have fears. I have fears, obviously, all the time about people being injured or those actual tangible fears. But I also have fears that it will become something. I do feel nervous that people will come there and want to make it into something that it is not. So they'll want to guide into something that serves them better. Not, and I don't mean the Underhouse community. I mean other people could come and sort of try to make it into something that feeds their souls better than the people who it's targeted for. So that mm-hmm. is something I feel nervous about.
Yeah, fair enough. And having that awareness, I think is sounds like a great first step. Cynthia, how might people get involved if they want to volunteer or access that naloxone training from Corey Matthews or maybe donate yoga supplies? What are some avenues for people to engage that way?
They can contact me through Facebook. For yoga supplies, Chinook Yoga has donated mats and bolsters and blocks and all that sort of thing. So we've got that. Of course, that's going to be an ongoing thing. So we've got that happening. But if they want to volunteer or help, I will be looking for a lot of volunteers. So they can just contact me through Facebook. I'm Cynthia Andel, and I'm pretty open to people coming in and working with us. And Corey will be doing two sessions or more if she needs to, so that we all have naloxone training. Hopefully we won't need that, but it's a good thing to have anyway. So
yeah.
And I want to pick up on one thing you said, the humanizing aspect. I think that's the really, really biggest part of this that we don't talk about enough, how inhuman it is to be underhoused. Mm-hmm. You know, an underhoused person, they'll get up in the morning and their focuses will be very different from somebody who has a home because they need to find places to spend their time that are not, they're not getting kicked out of, or they're, you know, that they're just being moved along from. You know, it's a very unsafe environment. It's a very inhumane environment. So what I'm hoping is that piece of humanity, you know, that recreational piece of humanity that we all benefit from.
Yeah, and it fits our previous conversation about hostile architecture, this feels in some ways as an antidote to that, as making public space truly public, at least for an hour a week.
It does, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cynthia, anything else we should touch on before I wrap up here?
I think we've covered it, but yes, I would love to have people contact me and get involved in this. And like I said, there will be 4 volunteers at every class, so that's going to take a lot of volunteers. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, I'd love to have help with this. And thank you so much for taking an interest in this.
Yeah, thank you for talking with me. I really appreciate your time.